Sea Bean, written and read by Sally Huband. A note on the text. Shetland is most often described as a dialect of Scots, strongly influenced by the lost language of Norn, a form of Old Norse, but it is also a language in its own right. Throughout Sea Bean, I use the convention in an island rather than on an island. This is how islanders, in Shetland at least, refer to the places in which they live. To write, I live on Unst, would sound as strange as I live on Edinburgh. Or, as someone once put it, we are not sitting on the backs of whales out here. Though I would argue that living in Shetland can feel, at times, like riding through the immensity of an ocean. Chapter 1. Northerly. We moved to Shetland in 2011, on the overnight ferry from Aberdeen, my husband and I, and our baby son. It was late July, and we had not given a thought to the weather. Within the harbour walls, the sea was calm. We stood on the deck and waited for the ferry to depart, not knowing that a northerly gale had worked the sea into a heavy swell. The engine tone deepened, mooring ropes were hauled in, and the ferry pulled slowly away from the quay, passing ships that serviced the oil and gas platforms in the North Sea, and a blue-hulled vessel named the New Venture. After weeks of packing, it was a relief to be finally heading north. Beyond the harbour breakwaters, the silty water of the River Dee fanned out to meet the bluish grey of the sea. The white trail of the ferry's wake steadily lengthened, and the dull concrete and silvery granite of Aberdeen receded into the distance. The ferry met the swell when land was still within sight. We made for the cabin and found that it was tiny and windowless and smelt of diesel fumes. My husband and I took it in turns to be sick, unsteadily passing our son between us. Somehow we fed and changed him and lay him down in the cot that was tightly wedged between the two lower bunks. He was quick to settle and soon fell asleep, and then we slumped down onto our beds, too nauseous to even think about changing out of our clothes. The cabin was at the front of the boat, and in a nightmarish semblance of a never-ending fairground ride, the bow would lift high and then drop through the air. Our beds juddered with the impact. The noise was thunderous. I lay awake and watched over the small body of my son and tried to quell a rising sense of terror. We had only just begun a voyage that would last for 14 hours, and it was already miserable. I was born in Bristol and spent the first years of my life within sight of the sea. We lived in Portishead, and the muddy Bristol Channel was visible beyond the chimneys of the coal and oil-fired power station and the chemical works. I learnt about quicksand and fast-rising tides and viewed the sea and the shore with wariness. On one beach, there was a derelict tidal swimming pool. Its crumbling walls contained a thick gloop of estuarine mud, deep enough to cover the body of a young child. I would falter at the sight of the sea through the gaps in the wooden deck of the Grand Pier in Weston-super-Mare. We moved inland when I was six, and only then did the sea become more inviting. A glass jar of pale yellow periwinkle shells, gathered from a Cornish beach on a childhood holiday, still sits on my shelf. When I left school, I moved to central Scotland to study environmental science and joined a university mountaineering club. The environment.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?